The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its management, staff, or underwriters.
Good morning and aloha, and welcome to Pilikia Opono. We're up early, and so are you. Hopefully you got a chance to see that morning sky, that morning Kauai sky. Oh my goodness. You know, sometimes it's difficult. I often take early flights to Honolulu for obvious reasons. And sometimes it's hard just not to just pull over and be late, you know, because you know what? Sorry I'm late, but it was just too pretty. It was just too pretty. And I always am hoping, okay, everybody watch the road. Not everybody can look at the sky because we got to stay safe. Good morning, Mauna Kea. How are you?
Aloha. I'm great.
Yeah, see, it's hard not to be great, right? The sky today. Oh, my goodness, the sky. So, and the birds. I got to the station and a shama greeted me at my car door and circled me, and I took a few steps, and he came back around. I don't know why I always say he. And then I took a few more steps, and he came back around. And it was just like a, you know, good morning. He wasn't trying to snag a piece of my hair. He was just, you know, good morning. So, okay, welcome, folks, to Pilikia Opono. This is Mauna Kea Trask and Maka'ala Kaumoana with you, and this is a conversation that we have a little bit with each other. Mauna Kea does the work and I just chatter on about things that interest us. If there's things that interest you, Hawaiian things that might be controversial, are they, is it true? Is it not true? Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it a correct read of history? Is it how we should be applying the tenets and historical lessons of our Hawaiian culture? We welcome your calls always, 808-826-7771. And I know you folks are listening because you tell me so in the store. You tell me so at the post office, so I know you're listening. Thank you for that. We appreciate you very much. Okay, Mauna, we did actually, sometimes we don't have anything very well planned, but we did actually talk about doing something specific today. You want to get us going a little bit?
Yeah, you want us to talk about sandalwood, right?
Yes.
Ahi.
Yes. Yes. Because I'm not sure I know the truth. I have read several versions of the history of sandalwood. And I read a new one actually late last night, which was that they think the very first time the white man was exposed to sandalwood was a stick of it was stuck in with the stack of firewood. And they smelled it and went, whoa, what is that? And that was kind of the beginning. I don't know. I don't know how the white man discovered it. Do you?
So...
Oh, did I take you off track already?
Yeah. Well,
he has a plan, and then I just sort of, you know, derail.
Okay, here we go. So, a couple things first. So today, you know, like I was going over, trying to research, and you're right, we kind of ramble. Apparently everyone's really happy with what we do because no one tells us anything. So I'm taking the lack of feedback
as a positive. Okay.
Yeah. All right. But sandalwood is tremendously interesting. So we kind of cross the contact line and then we're looking at the early years of post-contact. So this is, prime Kamehameha time. Really, he's the political economic bull at the time, and from there it just gets complex. And so our show notes today, mine's are largely based on Hawaiian Kingdom Volume 1 by Ralph Kuykendall, The Foundation and Transformation. This is from 1778 to 1854. I think it's already on the website, but if not, I'll give Laura the link. You can go on Ulukau and actually read the whole book on PDF, which is great. And now, Kai Kindall, you're right, we're talking history, so who knows what the truth is. All the adages are kind of correct. But I like him because I kind of, his biases are known and frequently written about. So Osorio does a good critique on Kai Kindall and Gavin Dawes. But basically, he's just a pro-American guy, product of his time. Which is 1885 to 1963 or something. And, you know, not a bad guy. Did a lot of good writing, but it's really well-researched. And for today's purposes, you know, you don't need to know a lot of Hawaiian because the English shipping records are clear. And anyway, so the reason why we do that is because we want to acknowledge our sources and whatever biases we may have or they may have. So, yeah, I think this is a great show. Because it's like could be a series, and I have working titles for this series. So it's Traitors to Traitors, or From Trade to Treason, How Mo Money Brought Both Problems to Hawaii. Right?
We like and that one.
That's pretty much it. So, yeah, going into it. So at this time, context is really, really important, because Hawaii, it, up until 1778, you know, we were not contacted with the larger world. And after that date, it's opened up. So that's a fundamental change. And we have to understand and remember what was going on at the time, right? So Hawaii in 1786 to 1830, that's what we're dealing with. Because after we killed Captain Cook, there was no known foreign contact until 1786, so about 7 years. Anyway, so at the time you have all the markets to the east, right? China and the Indies. That's a huge market. And the West always wanted it. Whereas the West Coast of what is now the United States was not the United States. So you had Russia in what is now Alaska. And then you had England, right? Which is like Hudson Bay Company, East India Trade Company in Canada-ish. Oregon, Washington were unclaimed territories, just wild fur traders going nuts. And then Spain was from about Northern California down to Chile, right? So, and then east of that chunk was France. That was the Louisiana colony. So that goes from Louisiana up into the Missouri territories by like the Great Lakes. So that's the world at the time. United States just won the Revolutionary War. They were broke, but they were all East Coast. So it was just open up. At the time, so you had three major modes of trade going on. You had the fur trade, Pacific Northwest, because Chinese love beaver pelts. You had, and that was the first one. Then you get sandalwood from about 1810. Like 1820, and then 1820 you get New England whaling comes into the Pacific, which was huge. You know, Nantucket was the center of it at the time, and then Hawaii was just it. That's where you stopped off, that's where you traded, you partied, you did all kinds of stuff, and that's the milieu we're in. Okay.
So they already knew about sandalwood?
Oh, yeah. So sandalwood, I mean, Chinese have been loving sandalwood forever.
They had their own, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
And so they exploited it. Right. Did they exploit it to the point of extinction nearly, and so they were looking for other sources, or did they just need more, do we think?
You know,
because I see them as exploitive.
Well, that was a time, right? So, yeah. Like, we're looking at
just take it all.
Look at history. Yeah. I mean, this was the heyday of exploitative resources. So like we're dealing with fur, sandalwood, and whaling. By the end of the 19th century, I mean, there were practically no beavers, whales, or sandalwood in the Western Hemisphere.
Take until gone.
Yeah, and that's human condition. So whether you're like, you started off about the white man, well, whatever color you want to be, as a human at this time, I mean, you are killing for profit, right? Everything.
What did they, before they found Hawaii sandalwood, why was it so exploited? Were they using it for the scent? Were they using it? They used it for a lot of things, right? For building and for the scent. I mean, I use it for incense. They use it for scent, right? I mean, it's such an amazing wood.
Yeah.
So does a lot of things, yeah.
There's all kinds. So so the main thing is it smells.
Yeah.
And then from that, you have, you know, there's a lot of, not really a good building wood, I understand. It's kind of soft. But you can use, there's a lot of medicinal and curative and magical proportions.
That's what I was thinking of. You know, it's like the smoke had curative powers, because it carried that scent, that it had spiritual applications, and so it wasn't for construction. It was, to me, and I have certainly not studied the issue, but to me, my memory in school of the time of sandalwood exploitation was the uses were interesting to me, that they were more meditative and curative and medicinal and stuff like that, kind of like how, you know, alcohol first began, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's like for human use, for expansion of their reality.
Yeah. I mean, like, senses are always big, right?
So yeah.
If something smells good, there must be a reason. And then, therefore, God or gods must have done it for a certain thing.
Right.
And it becomes a display of wealth. And, I mean, if you Google it, it's like, I mean, everything from, astringent, diuretic, mental clarity, relaxation, pretty much. I mean, humans have slathered everything on them for their bodies over time.
Of course. But I remember as a little girl having small sandalwood boxes. That would hold, you know, whatever little treasure you had. But we had little sandalwood boxes, and they smelled amazing. And then if you put something in it, it caught the smell a little bit, right? If it was porous at all, it absorbed some of the scent. So then you could put something in a sandalwood box, leave it there for a while, and take it out and put that little thing in your pocket, whatever that little thing was, and carry that scent with you. So it was kind of like that. I mean, I remember as a little girl doing that. I remember the adults doing that. And almost like a snuff. You take it out of your pocket and you sniff it once in a while and you kind of, you know, carry it away with a nice scent.
Oh, yeah. And then nowadays it seems like that's kind of a trite thing. But you got to remember how stink the world was.
Yeah, that's the thing. Nobody bathed. They couldn't. So. There wasn't the capacity. There wasn't a thing called deodorant. So you used whatever you could to make yourself or to mask the smell of the guy standing next to you.
Others, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And some societies were cleaner than others. I think the Hawaiians are pretty clean. You're just in the water all the time, right?
Yeah.
But some of these guys from the,
they were raunchy. Yeah, you didn't want to be next to them. And so that begs the question. Did Hawaiians use the sandalwood for something way back then? Were they thinking, we don't know why you guys want this stuff so much. We agree it smells good, but we don't use it for anything. So sure, we'll just go cut it all down and trade it to you, sell it to you, whatever, because we don't really use it. Was that what was going on?
That's a good point. Not really, but kind of. So real quick, Hawaiians... According to the, you know, if you, I hate saying do the research because that's such a thing.
You say it every show. You do know that.
Yeah. But when you look at the record, right, you actually read the stuff.
You just changed the words, folks. It still means do the research.
Yeah.
Do your own stupid homework.
Do your homework.
You must be a really fun dad. Just do your homework.
Yeah. You know, the Hawaiian economy was simple pre-contact, but I don't think that means it was it was bad or anything or a value judgment. It just was as complex as it needed to be because it's so it's relatively easy to live on these islands if you organize correctly, right? You just divert some water, you do some things, you work together, fight some wars, force some people, and then it works. When contact happens, the record...
Ah, for the old days.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's sounding very attractive today, given the 50 things on my desk this morning that I must provide testimony. And this time of year, folks, our inboxes are full of you must, you must, you must. And I'm really getting tired of people telling me what I must do. But you know how complex things can get in modern times. And I'm thinking, for the days of all I needed to do was dig a ditch.
Well, I don't know, man. Anyway, so Hawaiians adapted very quickly to trade and commerce with foreigners. And this is a quote, it's evidenced by complaints of high prices made by many early visitors to the islands, which we still hear today. So, you know, some things don't change. Kamehameha quickly. So when we first make contact, fur is the big show. You're right. Hawaiians approach their culture, their material culture, very much from a useful perspective. So if you can't eat it, and if you can't really use it, then it the more nutritious and the more utilitarian something is, the more important it is. They're not really into decorations. And you can kind of see this because early traders weren't really successful in, like, the glass bead thing that other indigenous people were susceptible to. You also look at, you know, they didn't name things that weren't important to them. And if you look, like, you go Bishop Museum, it's odd. You never see ancient pearl jewelry, right? You don't see Hawaiians using pearls. I don't know. I just don't think it was much use. Like, they looked at it, it's like, you know, if you bit into an oyster, you crack your teeth. How irritating. Like, yeah. What are you going to do
with
it?
So annoying, because now you have a broken tooth. It's useless because you can't fix it.
I think it's so interesting. So I do think, and there is, like, Hawaiians used it, but it's not a good building wood. And, yeah, you can smell good, but Hawaiians are good about bathing. So it was kind of just a thing. But what happened was, Kamehameha quickly got into trade. You know, a lot of weapons moved hands during his wars. Iron was the number one thing. I mean, we killed Captain Cook for nails, right? So all this stuff is, you're right, that anecdotally, no one really knows how sandalwood was found. But when they're provisioning these ships, one of the things they need is firewood. And they assume that some sandalwood must have been mixed in there because Hawaiian's just cutting wood. The thing is that fur, you know, we're provisioning whaling ships and fur ships on their way to China and throughout the Pacific, but we have no real goods except hogs and vegetables, and Kamehameha establishes a monopoly on pigs in order to control trade and ensure a more stable economy, and he gets his cut. So Kamehameha was really good about, at least he was aware about economic theory, and he had foreign advisors to give him these ideas. Like, he established pilots in all the harbors. He charged tonnage duties. And anyway, so he figures out, like, oh, sandalwood is kind of a thing. And so the record says that three Americans from Boston, Nathan and Jonathan Winship and William Heath Davis, they're on this fur trade expedition in 1811. And so they're in Hawaii from November and December. They're provisioning during winter because no one wants to be there in winter, right? Hawaii's good. While they're in Hawaii, they pick up a cargo of sandalwood. And they, on their way to go trade furs in China. And they freight it on the king's account. So that means they make an agreement with Kamehameha. Okay, we'll take this sandalwood and trade it. And then you'll get a cut. So they come back, and 6 months later, and they have a consignment of Chinese merchandise for Kamehameha. And Kamehameha immediately establishes a royal monopoly, gives them exclusive contract to harvest or purchase, and he gets one quarter of all net proceeds to be paid in either coined money or goods from China as he deems proper. So that's within, you know, Hawaiians were not duped, I don't think. I don't think that's accurate to say. We are about it. And Hawaiians are recognized as shrewd businessmen. Kamehameha is seen as a fair, honest dealer. He protects traders. And at this time, again, we're dealing with, like, so this is 1811, 1812. You got Napoleonic Wars going on. Europe is secularizing. And War of 1812, the newly born U.S. United States of America gets into a war with Britain over increased maritime trade. Because, okay, you get your freedom, fine. But now you're cutting into the crown's, you know, purse, right? So that's a problem. So at this time, people are just blockading ships, and you have letters of mark and reprisal, which is like state-issued licenses to pirate. And the world's wild. And Hawaii is right in the middle of it. And I love the fact that Kamehameha is right there in the center saying, hey, great, you want to trade, let's trade. But you all know, if you cross me, I'm going to do you like I did Cook. And everyone respects him for it. And so things are pretty interesting at the time. And Sandalwood is just going. But Kamehameha sees, part of the reason why he establishes this royal monopoly is because when trade's not restricted, the chiefs under him are causing the Makainana to harvest all the wood, right? I mean, Kamuli's having thousands of trees and pounds collected. Everyone's doing it.
Do we have a lot of sandalwood on Kauai?
Oh, China called Hawaii Sandalwood Mountain. They were just like, oh, there's these islands that are just filled with sandalwood. Because Hawaiians didn't really, they stayed along the coast and went Mauka when they needed to and had to. But their economy of scale didn't require going everywhere.
Right. You know, there's been some recent work, well, not that recent, in the last couple of decades, mapping.
Sam Gaughan
and Kavika Winter, and there's one other fellow that did a lot of the GIS work. And they've mapped. Actually, I think it started as mapping agricultural activity, but it resulted in mapping where people were, you know, mostly coastal areas and so forth throughout the archipelago. And it's really an interesting work. And it talks about just exactly that. If you had sufficient resources where you were, why would you climb a mountain? You know, that's just, unless it was for spiritual reasons, which Hawaiians did, or medicinal reasons, which Hawaiians did. But for the most part, if you had enough protein and enough carbohydrates and enough places to have a little fun, you stayed there, right? You wouldn't be moving around. So that's what interests me about the sandalwood in Hawaii. Did they use it? Yes. How did they use it? Hard to say, yeah? I mean, they didn't construct with it. Did they use it the same way that everybody else was kind of using it to kind of, you know, because it was smelled good and was pleasant, or did they believe that the smoke was special? I mean, I don't think they used a lot of it, otherwise they wouldn't have had so much of it.
Or it would have figured more prominently.
Yeah.
You just don't see, you know.
It's just not mentioned. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Koa is everywhere. You can do everything with it. There, you can't build a canoe out of it, right? You can't fight with it. Kauwila is the best. And so, like, what are you left doing? You're right, it's ornamental. And Hawaiians just weren't big on ornamental things.
No, no.
Because, hey, and those of us who know, you know, you go in Kalalau and try camp with no provisions. You're not looking for sandalwood. You know, you're living.
You're starving, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but we knew we had it. It wasn't that we didn't know we had it. And then I have this image. These guys show up on the beach in a boat and say, we're looking for this, and hand the local native a piece of that wood. And the native's thinking to himself, why, you know? But if you're looking for it, okay, must have value to you that we don't understand. If it was me, the first thing I'd say is, what do you use it for? Because we don't use it a lot. So what do you use it for? And that would begin a conversation. I don't know if that occurred or not, but that would be where I would start, right?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it did, because it's kind of a little more, there's a more background to that, right? So 1811, it really starts going. So we were made contact with in 1778, right? So let's look at the numbers. 1811 minus 1778. So there's already 33 years of interaction with Westerners and foreigners in general.
So we'd already figured out they were a little bit crazy. We'd already figured out that they saw things differently than we saw, that they lived differently than we live. So we already probably were getting to a point where we just didn't ask a lot of questions. You want to trade? Cool.
Well, and I think that we were very much into it, right? Because they had products that made life easier. And I think at a human level, that's always important. Mm. And because you see it in when the chiefs came from Kaiki, you know, Samoa or Tahiti or whatever, and they supplanted the previous chiefs, Hawaiians went with it because they brought ulu. They had different gods that seemed to be, you know, placated and delivered. So Hawaiians did evolve and progress, right? So right now you have about a generation who only known that foreigners were here too. So the older generation remembers is there, you know, before foreigners. But a lot of people, hey, they've always been here. And what it is like, last week they came in, and then you gave them, you know, that you wanted something from them. Say you wanted a gun, and then you had to give them three pigs for it, right? Or whatever you needed to do. The next week they come over and they go, hey, I'll give you 10 guns for one pikul of sandalwood. And you're like,
yeah, or easy, Eliyahu. Bro.
And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You give me three guns for some wood? Perfect.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But there's a piece of me, maybe not in front of those guys, but later on in the village saying, yeah, what is it about this stuff, man? Are we missing something? What is it about this stuff
are we just saying, okay,
those guys are nuts?
No, but I'm sure they go like, well, it's everyone knows, right? They go, oh, it smells real good, and the Chinese love it. And they go, oh, okay, because it does smell good.
Yeah.
Like, really? You'll give me that much for that wood?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. You know?
So I mean, how did it get so out of control? Hawaiians were known for the way they managed the resources.
Okay.
For understanding impacts, for understanding balance, for understanding not taking too much, for keeping things in managed state. And then all of a sudden comes sandalwood and they strip it all.
Well, this is the thing. I don't know to what extent, where's the line that Hawaiians are human and then they're the noble savage, right? We always have to be aware of that. So look at like Mahalapu Caves. There's a lot of birds that Hawaiians ate in those caves that haven't been around for a minute.
Yeah, well, they couldn't get away. They didn't fly. It was really cool. Birds that can't fly are dinner. Yeah.
And there are Olelono Eau about evil chiefs that take too much resources, and those are the ones that get deposed, and they're unbearable people. It's just a fact. But with sandalwood, what you see, and this is, you know, what it is that Kamehameha had his royal monopolies, right? And everyone was, and part of it was to make sure that to avoid the problems he started to see early in the trade when the lower chiefs were telling their makainana, cut sandalwood all day. And so people weren't tending their kalo fields. And so he monopolized it, said, no, I'm controlling this all. You guys go back to farming. And so that's kind of what happened. When Kamehameha dies in 1819, this is before missionaries come, there is the overthrow of the kapu. There is, everything happens. I mean, that is, and it's Hawaiian grown. And one of the things that goes away is his royal monopoly. So Lio'lio opens it up to his very powerful aunties and uncles. And then by, you know, 1829, so 10 years, there's no more sandalwood in the islands. And it's a tremendous ill effect. And there's quotes. And so what would happen is Hawaiians were land rich, cash poor, and but they understood these concepts. And so they love the goods, and the Kamehamehas at the time, they were all about luxury. You know, they're wearing their wealth. So, and they're paying everything with promissory notes. So someone comes in with the Cleopatra's barge, like, oh, I want that ship. Okay. And you just write a note, you know, 100,000 pounds of sandalwood or whatever it is. And they start racking up tremendous debt. And it becomes a huge problem. But at the same time, the American traders, and these are largely East Coast merchants, because of geopolitics, right? So 1815, Napoleonic Wars kick up in Europe again, and England and all these guys go to leave Pacific and kind of go fight Napoleon. So that opens up the market to Americans, and the missionaries come. So there's all these geopolitical things happening. So none of this is fait accompli. It could have happened anyway, but this is the way it ends up happening. So then they open it up, and Hawaiians are just buying, the chiefs are buying everything on consignment. And so this is a quote. So this is, so while the American missionaries are saying these guys don't pay their debts, they're still allowing them to rack up debt. So this is Kaikioewa. This is the first governor of Kauai. He is remarkably fond of purchasing novelties and almost whatever is offered by foreigners with little regard, either to the cost or utility of the article. This propensity to buy seems indeed to be deeply rooted in most chiefs. Some of the foreigners who trade here are too well acquainted with this trait in their character. For however bitterly they may complain of dilatory payments and want of truth and integrity in the natives, they urge upon them things which they do not want and for which they have no means of paying, but by imposing new burdens on the people. So at the time you have, so it's like by 1826, the debt that the chiefs have to the U.S. merchants is so much that Congress sends two American warships to go remind the Hawaiians that they owe money. And one of them is the USS Dolphin, right? And we had that show, mm-hmm. the Honolulu riots.
Yeah.
So, and then that leads to, so that hoobaloo happens, and then you get
So human race is human race. It doesn't matter. With exposure to each other, you then have these other ideas and then the wants and needs. I have to say, it's a little disappointing. I mean, I would have hoped when you come from such a generous place, I would have hoped that they wouldn't have gone so directly to greed.
People are people, you know, but and the same thing too. So you have, I mean, I would have hoped they wouldn't have wholesale rejected their religion and culture. And that had just happened. Right. So,
yeah. So let's take that note. Let's take that note and just say you're listening to Pilikia Opono with Mauna Kea Trask and Maka Alaka Omwana. This is KKCR. We're so happy that we have a community radio station that allows this kind of interesting conversation. I find it interesting. I hope you do too. Mauna Kea is, you know, he's done some work on this so that he can say the things that he's saying. He's not, you know, blowing smoke here. So, thank you, Mauna, for doing the research, for bringing this forward, and thank you, KKCR, for the opportunity. Okay, go.
All right. So, yeah, but at the time, right, the whole world is changing so rapidly. So you have, like, the Industrial Revolution is rising. The kings and queens of Europe are losing power. You know, you had the American and French Revolution. These were tremendous changes in humanity. And so you have, for the first time, capitalism. Capitalism is something old hat to us, and the ill effects are well known. Back then, they weren't. I mean, you were getting out of the yoke of the crown, which could be tremendously. I'm not trying to, like, excuse these people. They did horrible things, and I'll never forgive them for what they did to my culture and place. But when you look at historical context, I mean, there's a lot to consider, right? So in any event, that's happening all over, and it just seems like there's just no more rules. And I mean, imagine right now if you're Hawaiian in 1778 and Captain Cook comes. I mean, it's like a UFO comes, right? You have this high technology, and out walks this short, fair-skinned, bright-eyed thing. And you're like, geez. And then it's just all tech changes. There's new gods. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. None of these people follow any rules. And they're not being smitten. You know, I mean, like, it's just, like, you control-alt-delete society. And so what fills that gap? It's like you can clear, all of us who do restoration work, right? You have a bunch of howbush. You clear the howbush, guinea grass just pops up, right? Like, what's going to fill the vacuum? You got to have
nature abhors a vacuum. You know
that's right. And so in this whole thing, that's just what happens. And so the chiefs decimate the Hawaiian population. And we can lay blame, yeah, and it's a complex situation, but the chiefs did that. And that's why we have to be wary of or knowledgeable of our past. And anyway, so
well,
this
leads one of the
to
the
first written
show.
Tax law of 1826, which required every able-bodied Hawaiian man to bring half a pikul, which is a Chinese unit of measure, about 130, 140 pounds.
Hang on, a pikul is a Chinese measure?
Pikul. P-I-C-U-L.
Oh, P-I-C-U-L. Pikul.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Hawaii, all of a sudden, in order to pay the chief
debt. It's like
debt,
a cubit, right? When God talked to Noah.
Yeah, you
and
know.
He said, yeah, Noah, and you will build an ark, and it will be this many cubits by that many cubits. I love Bill Cosby's version. What's a cubit? Yeah, what's a cubit? What's a picul? Okay, so a picul is what? Wait a minute, because we don't use that anymore.
No. It's about 130, 140 pounds.
So like the weight of an average human.
Yeah.
Or small human, okay.
So they got to get half, so about 70 pounds. Every guy owns 70 pounds of iliahi, or four Spanish dollars, or anything comparative value. And then each woman owes a 6x12-foot mat or tapa of equal value, or one Spanish dollar. And then
that's steep.
It's steep, man. Steep. And that tax law, in order to cover the debt, just decimates sandalwood on Hawaii because everyone's cutting now. And Kamehameha's monopoly is gone. It unchecked capitalism. And chiefs still racking up debt. And so the last note, apparently, by 1829, was those notes signed that year by the chiefs weren't paid off until 1843.
Wow.
So sandalwood went, but the debts, you know, kept going, right?
Yeah, because they didn't have anything to pay it with.
That's right.
And because you get addicted to that stuff. You know, we get addicted to affluence. We get addicted to the concept of more and excess, and you know, there are many parts of our society, even on this island, that are trying to teach and practice, you know, minimization, but they still want the very best water purifier. Cracks me up. We're going to live off the land. We're not going to do, you know, any harm. We're not going to do anything like that, but we're going to, but when I go to, but I'm going to pay for water because I believe that it has to have all this stuff in it and all that stuff taken out. Or I'm going to buy, I mean, it's just really interesting to me. Okay, so when sandalwood is gone, the debt remains. Do we have any sandalwood now? We have a little bit, yeah?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of hard to tell, because if you look up sandalwood, you're just going to get a bunch of wellness, you know, products. But
well, that's something. And see, there's still a market.
Oh, the wellness industry is like billions.
So right? They still believe that it has medicinal or wellness or healthy qualities.
Oh, yeah, it still smells good. You know,
yeah, well, there's that. Great. Yeah, there's that. I just can't help but think there are so many religions around the world, so many practices where smoke, because it rises, becomes a communication between man and God, or man and the universe. And it would seem to me, if I was designing that theory or that system, that sweet-smelling smoke would be even better. You know, not only would your message reach the gods would like it, you know. I mean, to me, that's what I think of when I think of smoke and burning something to make it smell good. Sandalwood smells good all on its own. It doesn't need to be burning, but boy, when you burn it, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, you know, I've smelled sandalwood boxes before, but I don't even know if I've ever smelled sandalwood.
Incense? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty intense. I mean, you got to get past the smoke, but, you know. Sandalwood, and it does impart, as I said earlier, it does impart its scent to other porous materials. So it does have, you can carry me in your pocket quality, right? It does have a transference, which I think would make it more valuable. It isn't just in the tree and it doesn't just stay in the wood. So if we have sandalwood today, we probably have it in protected places, and I'm sure people are cultivating it again. Do we know or do we not know? Maybe we should find that out.
I think so. Let me see. Hold on.
I wonder what. So the value today is in the wellness community, in the beauty and wellness areas of commerce.
Yeah. So if you look up Hawaiian sandalwood products, it's like. Essential oil, miracle botanicals.
Miracle? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, doTERRA's got some. It's all organic stuff, type stuff, sandalwood lotion. But I think there is a move to recultivate it and do all that stuff.
Yeah, cultivate it, because it's good for the land, right? It was a native, correct?
Yeah, it was.
So it would be good for the forest. It would be good for the land. It would keep things in balance. So it would be good to cultivate it. We should get somebody on to, Laura. You can get right on that, right? We'll get somebody on that can talk about the value of it to the environment, the value of it to the other cultural resources of the Mauka lands. See, if any of you were not driving right now and would call in, you could tell us, you know, what that is. But okay.
Right here. Yeah, so there's a 2017 article, Pacific Edge Magazine Online, talking about the rebirth of sandalwood.
Uh-huh.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Good. I understand the commerce piece of it, but you have to have a value to it in order to encourage people to plant more. And if planting more is better for the forest, then that's a win-win, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I'm translating this to mean to me, what lesson do I take from that experience other than greed is a bad thing? Uh-huh. Well, we kind of knew that one. But what exploitive thing is happening right now, and there are many. So as you're listening to the story of the sandalwood, my idea is that you might be saying to yourself, what is it, what things are today coming from our native world, our natural world, our traditional cultural practices and resources that are being exploited? And we can all, each and every one of us listening can point to probably a dozen of them fairly easily. There's an issue that's hot on my front burner right now, which is exactly the same, which is the aquarium fish trade. And if you're interested in helping with that, there's a hearing on Friday at the Board of Land and Natural Resources related to another proposal yet again to take aquarium fish from West Hawaii. The people of the West Hawaii fisheries folks are opposing it. So if you want to help them, that's fine. Again, it's this Friday at the BLNR. You can send in what you think by the end of business today. It's just another sandalwood. It's just another sandalwood. That's why I was asking the question about the role that sandalwood plays in the forest, because these aquarium fish are our reef keepers. They are the strength of our Hawaiian reefs. These are the little fish that keep the coral healthy. And we know that our corals are going to be in trouble because climate change is threatening them more than anything has in probably history. And the same thing will be true for our Malka resources. So we have to, now that, you know, it's the old adage, when you know better, you do better. And so the concept I was interested in, Mauna Kea, that you were talking about was how that got to greed so fast, how that got to overusing it, because Hawaiians traditionally didn't live like that. You know, they managed things in balance. And yet, with everything going on in the world and economies shifting and influences changing and mindsets changing, boom, there you are, right? Right? Straight to exploitation.
Well, I think I
feel so fragile, this ability of ours to manage things in balance like we know is right. It just feels so fragile. It just takes so little to tick it to the other side of the scale.
We got to remember that there was a wholesale rejection at the top of our political culture, right? I mean, the Hawaiian people are just people, but the Hawaiian culture is what recognized the interconnectedness of things and the kapu system and resource management. Once you got rid of that culture and that social organization, yeah, you immediately go crazy. And so that, and what replaced it was, within short shrift, the East Coast Protestant capitalist ethic,
yeah,
which Hawaiian chiefs, who had the power to dictate anything in society, embraced wholeheartedly. And so what we need to do when we're looking at this stuff, and the message I take away from this is, number one, you need a diversified economic strategy in Hawaii. And my whole, my fantasy series from traders to traders is, it shows that. I mean, you got provisioning ships and sandalwood. And sandalwood was unique because it was a homegrown commodity, right? Fur and whales weren't.
Yeah, we have a caller.
And you got sugar.
Mauna, we have a caller. Laura's going to try to do it without hanging up on him.
Oh, no. Here
I
we
know.
Go.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Aloha, caller.
Yeah.
You're on the air.
Iliahi.
Yes.
How's it? So can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So Iliahi, I've been looking at it for the past 2 or 3 years.
Oh, good.
Iliahi, we see it. You can go on Amazon. You find Iliahi seeds.
Oh.
To grow them from some seeds, okay, but you don't know what you're going to get with it. There are 4 types of Iliahi, and there's one that actually smells more than the rest of them. And to get these things is very hard. You need to find out which one. I know of 2 Iliahi trees on Kauai that I know is Iliahi, and the owners don't want to give me anything so I can propagate. They want to keep it to themselves. I don't care, because I can go Big Island and maybe I'll talk to those people and see what we can get.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we need to bring back the Iliahi.
Yeah.
When you drive around, what do you see? Monkey pod trees. Mm. Why the heck we got so many monkey pod trees? We should have been planting Iliahi. When they planted the monkey pod tree, all they're trying to do is separate us from our culture. So anyway, Iliahi is coming back. We should bring it back. It's going to take a little while because we have to wait for some white person to say, oh, look, the Hawaiians destroyed the Iliahi, so I'm going to bring it back. Oh, wow. So nice of them.
Yeah. So, no, however it happens, if it happens, it's good, right?
No. We have to do it. We have to stop
okay.
to take a, just like Mauna Kea, we have to take a hold of our history, and we have to bring it up. I have not seen anything that anybody has gotten a hold of. I'm getting off the subject. Iliahi is very hard because when you grow it from the seed next to the tree, if you don't leave it by the tree for at least 2 years, the minute you dig it up, 6 months later, that Iliahi will be dead. So there's something symbiotic between the trees and the seeds. So I don't know how we can get to grow them. The only way I know to do that would be to propagate them by taking a branch off And those people that have a known Eliyahu, I cannot get them to give me anything. So I have to go to the Big Island. Once I go to the Big Island, we're planning, my wife and I are planning to do that in August of this year. And then we're going to see if we can get a hold of the people on the Big Island who have known Eliyahu. We can see if we can get all four of them and bring them back to Kauai. So that's where we at right now.
Wonderful. I wonder if the National Tropical Botanical Gardens has any.
No, they don't.
Okay.
And they won't give.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I think this is great. What's your name?
My name?
Yeah, if you're comfortable.
Wait a minute. I can barely hear you.
I can hear
Monica, you. I can barely hear you.
Okay, is it Waylon?
Part of the calling is because I'm interested in your opinion. Sometime in the future, I'd like to get together with you.
There you go.
Not right now.
I understand. I just want to say thank you, Brother Waylon, because you bring up a very important point, and that is we need to do it. You know, there's a lot of talk out there, and I think a lot of our energy is focused on going against things versus being positive and going towards things. So, like, bringing back Eliyahu, and I'm not a horticulturalist, and I do understand that it's difficult to propagate because, like you said, there's a symbiotic relationship. Germination takes time. But you, by all means, should approach OHA and get help to get some kind of grant money and get a lease from State Land Division and propagate sandalwood. That's a great thing.
Because that's where I'm at. But OHA, every time I go over there with an idea, I want to write a book about our heroes. Oh no, somebody else is doing that. We're not going to. OHA is. I'm not the right color for OHA. I am Hawaiian, Kanaka, but I'm not the right color.
What color are you? Purple?
Yeah, just about. When I walk in, I don't get an aloha. I get a
right.
Monica, I'll look you up and get in contact with you because I'm also trying to get HPR to give me a reporter status so I can talk to people and make money because basically I still live in this capitalistic environment. But you've always been an interest to me, and I've always, and you know that Wahine we're talking to, and we're listening to her too. I've just got
her too
on this. I talked to HPR a long time ago, and now they're talking to me a little bit more. So anyway, Eliyahu, we'll get off the subject. Eliyahu, you're right. Oh, it's going to take a little while to bring back, and I don't think that's why we don't see it. The other tree my wife wants is Ohia Lehua.
Mm-hmm.
She wants the two colors. So I'm out there looking for Ohia Lehua. I go over to Honolulu to help my sister, and there she is. She has two Ohia Lehua, one yellow, one red. Oh, it's written on the pot, and it's, that's my sister. I go, where did you get that? I'm trying to get a hold of those people, and I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to have them send it to me on Kauai, and we'll get Ohia Lehua in our backyard because it makes my wife happy.
And all amen for
what you
that.
Laughing at?
You know, let's make our wives happy.
Yeah, Karen, I'm laughing at how important that statement is.
Yeah.
That's so important.
But, thank you so much, Brother Waylon. I really appreciate your call. You're a first caller. I think we should note that.
Yeah, never. Nobody ever calls us.
Okay. I got to hang up too because I drive in my Mahalo, brother.
Oh, see. Okay, thanks, huh?
Aloha.
Aloha.
I just want to say something real quick about what Brother Waylon just said. I think it answers your Makala is, you know, what do we do? And as we go forward, and why did the Chiefs do what they did? Is because they were looking for a better life. And it's incumbent upon government to provide that. And if you don't, if there's no rails, if there's no guidelines, but you don't ensure a better life, then you're gonna get a worse one.
Yeah, you know? And I'd really like to support anyone who has given it this much thought and energy and has this much motivation, to, you know, don't quit just because you get the no. Do you know how many no's Mauna Kea and I get, you know, on a daily? You know, don't, you can't quit because of no. I just take the energy of no and use it, you know, use it. And especially for OHA, and I you know, they claim to be turning leaves, so let's help them turn sandalwood leaves. It's possible. It's possible. It's all possible. Okay, Mauna, we've done it again. We've burned an hour, and we've barely scratched the surface, pun intended, with the sandalwood. But I thank you for doing this. This was my request because I didn't know, and because I'm a curious kind of sort, and I wanted to be sure that that we didn't forget to do it. So if I don't say to Mauna, okay, we got to do this one next, because I lose it off my list. But if there's something else that any of you would like to hear on Pilikia Opono, let us know. That's why we're here. It all started with, you know, is it a problem or is it okay? And it started with the conversation about development and things like that. But today's show has revealed that, you know, that concept of greed, the concept of more, the concept of out of balance, it happened in the native culture as well. Any exposure tends to bring that bug with it, right? So we're gonna wind this up and thank you. And folks, please don't forget BLNR, Board of Land and Natural Resources hearing is this Friday. Any testimony that you'd like to submit needs to be done today, so they have a chance to get it to the members. It's item F2, the West Hawaii Aquarium Fish Trade, and F3, which is the Division of Aquatic Resources, State Division of Aquatic Resources rules. This is something that I care deeply about, and to me, it's today's sandalwood. So Mauna, have a wonderful day. Thank you for your work. You're still doing the thing. And Pilikia Opono will be back next month, the second Wednesday at 7 a.m. And we'd be happy to hear from you. If you have ideas for the show, please email them to gm@kkcr.org. And we would love to use your ideas. And if you want... If you have an idea and you want to call in and help us with it, that'd be great too. We're up for it. So Mauna,
thank you.
How's the rest of your day? Okay, busy. Bye. Locked up in the office.
You know, the only answer to that question is it's going great. Let's just be be happy for what we got. Let's make our spouses happy. Let's do good, and you know, do our part.
Anyway,
you guys, thank you so much, Waylon.
You're welcome. So
I want to just let you guys know that we just got a second caller.
Oh.
And he said he was calling earlier, but the light doesn't go off.
It doesn't go off, so we didn't know.
Yeah, and so, you know, we got two calls today, and he said he loves this show. He looks forward to it every month, and he's so grateful for all your...
Find that guy.
...Mauna Manaʻo, and so am I. And thank you so much for being a part of Kauai Community Radio.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Mauna. We know you have a busy work day ahead of you. I, of course, am going to make good trouble, so I have a busy day, too, making good trouble all day long.
Yay.
And mahalo. This is Makaʻala, and this was Pilikia Opono. Next month, second Wednesday, 7 a.m., join us. Call in. We promise that Laura will pay attention
to
the
phone.
I'll
pay more attention, and maybe, we'll have Mauna Kea call on the office line instead.
Okay. Okay.
Ahui ho, everybody.
And keep the wives happy. I like that mantra.
Me too.
Keep the wives happy.
Have a great day, sweetheart.
Aloha hine.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.